Welcome to the Flannery Podcast. This is episode 29. The issue this week, Trump said, don't worry, be happy. And many died. Stay tuned.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy.
We're broadcasting this episode of the Flannery Podcast from Owl's Head in Maine. The show is traveling this week. Just imagine this ornery owl shaking its head no at Trump and his crime family. Anyhow, more realistically, Tyrone Trump has now confessed that he mistook Bob Marley's song as his way to address a pandemic that infects millions and kills hundreds of thousands of people. You know Bob's song, Don't Worry, Be Happy. That was Trump's message to America during this major health emergency. Trump said he knew this virus could be devastating as it was airborne, but he was going to play it down. Listen to what he told Bob Woodward.
Well, I think, Bob, really, to be honest with you,
sure, I want you to
I
be.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't want to create a panic.
Of course, that's not exactly true. That is, he wasn't playing it down. He didn't play it down. He said it was a hoax. He obliterated it as a significant concern for Americans. He denied it was anything at all.
I think it's going to work out good.
There's no reason to panic because we have done so good.
Trump lied to America as he does all the time. He told people not to wear masks, one thing that really works to protect us. We'll listen to Dr. Offit on the value of wearing masks and keeping your distance later in this podcast. Trump said he didn't want to cause a panic by telling America the truth. Since when does Trump care if he causes a panic or not? He's telling America that the streets of our cities are crime zones, that he has to send in military men, but he's the same guy who doesn't want to panic? He has a strange way of showing it. In other words, it's not the truth. When he says something that's an admission that's against his interest, that's probably the truth. But anything else he says, you can't rely on at all. Trump was telling America what he wanted them to believe to get past the State of the Union and his impeachment in early February. And he wanted as many people as possible at work, unprotected if that's what it took, because he thought if he could sustain the economy, he'd be returned to office no matter how many crazed decisions he made. After George Floyd was killed by a policeman, Bob Woodward had a conversation with him. He asked Trump if he didn't have a sense of white privilege. And Trump belittled Woodward for being sensitive to the advantage gained by all white persons, his reference to white privilege, because of the racism suffered by persons of color. Trump said Woodward had drunk the Kool-Aid.
And do you have any sense that that privilege has isolated and put you in a cave to a certain extent? Is it put me and I think lots of white privileged people in a cave, and that we have to work our way out of it to understand the anger and the pain particularly black people feel in this country?
You really drank the Kool-Aid, didn't you? Listen to you. Wow. No, I don't feel that at all.
In fact, the opposite was true. Citizens across America relied on what Trump said, that it was a hoax. This was his Kool-Aid that he was distributing to us, to all Americans. And by now, all of us know someone or other who was infected or died. That's no hoax. That's real stuff. And we're finding out people, even with the slightest infections, can suffer for long periods of time afterwards, maybe years. Trump was the one dishing out the Kool-Aid, and Bob Woodward wasn't taken in by it. Trump is the one to watch out for. This was further compounded in terms of the trust of America for its so-called president by Trump calling our military suckers for risking their lives and dying when serving to preserve and protect this nation's democracy. And this was our commander-in-chief? In 2016, the military supported Trump 2-1 over Hillary Clinton. Not this time. Biden is favored to get the support of the military. It just is reasonable. You see what he's done. You've seen what he's done to military people. Whether they're speaking about him in the impeachment investigation or they're doing their duty, if it's not what he wants to do instinctively or for whatever selfish reason or for whatever his lord and master Putin wants, he does it. Biden explained he was angry that Trump would speak and act this way. The reporter who wrote the Atlantic article had a few observations to make about what he thought Trump was doing when he did what he did.
He doesn't understand why one would go pay that level of respect to fallen American soldiers.
A fair question is, how is this playing in the down ticket races? You know, the Senate races, the congressional races. As I'm in Maine, I'm curious about what's going on in Maine, where I am now. The short answer is what Trump's doing is not going down well in Maine. Stay tuned. In Maine, Susan Collins is the incumbent senator. She's the senator who voted for Kavanaugh to join the Supreme Court by wringing her hands that she believed he'd follow precedent like Roe v. Wade. Susan did a dance of the seven veils while we were all wondering what she would do with the Kavanaugh nomination, like she was going to do the right thing and impose him. But she probably never planned that, and she didn't oppose him. She supported him. Susan is also the same senator who voted to acquit Trump when he was impeached and said afterwards that now he'd learned his lesson. Though she didn't convict him, he just learned it from going through the process. Trump then went on to exercise even more dictatorial powers for Susan's failure to convict Trump. Of course, all Republicans voted that way, save one, Senator Mitt Romney. In other words, you could say we're in this mess in part because the Senate failed its responsibility, at least in the Republican caucus, to use the powers granted by the Constitution in 1787. There is a Democratic challenge to Collins returning to the Senate because this is her year when she's up for re-election or not. Her opposition is Sarah Gideon. She's the Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives, a Democrat from Freeport. Her dad is from India. Her mom is a second-generation Armenian-American. She has a BA from GWU's Elliott School of International Affairs in Washington, D.C. She cut her teeth as an intern for Senator Claiborne Pell. Sarah was the vice chair of the Freeport Town Council before becoming a state rep and then the Speaker of the House. She has explained why she is running for the Senate.
You know, when I first made the decision to run for our local town office, it was because I believed that public service is the way that you can improve the lives of people around you. And that's why in the State House, I worked so hard to bring Republicans, Democrats, and independents together to fight the opioid crisis and save lives, to lift people out of poverty, to tackle the climate crisis, to lower the cost of prescription drugs, and to make sure that we were protecting and expanding health care, including reproductive health care. Now, it's not what we see in Washington, where Senator Collins does not stand up to Donald Trump. She votes with him 94% of the time and also allows Mitch McConnell to block progress on almost any issue. In the Senate, I will be a champion for us as Mainers. I will fight for those very issues I fought for in the State House, and I will never forget where I come from or who I represent. Thank you.
About a year ago, when Holly, my wife, and I were in Maine, we attended an organizing meeting of her supporters and was impressed that even without the contrast to Collins, what a formidable public servant she was. Sarah has worked on a host of constructive changes that commend her to serve in the U.S. Senate and to give the old heave-ho to Collins, well-deserved. Sarah worked for Medicaid expansion in Maine, worked for lower energy costs and clean energy, worked for 80% renewable energy by 2030, fought to expand abortion access, resisted the efforts of the Quebec Power Company to build a power line project in Maine. I worked in our Virginia community with others to stop a dirty coal power line that would have run from West Virginia to Maryland and to points north without a single atom of electricity going to any of these states. I've seen what these fights can be like. I appreciate what she's doing and had to do in Maine. Sarah won the Democratic nomination to run for the Senate over other worthy contenders and has raised a lot of campaign funds and is presently slightly ahead of Collins in the polls. Biden is beating Trump 2-1 statewide in the polls right now. Only this past Friday, there was the first debate in that Senate contest. I'll only touch on a few things, but one of the first questions put to Collins was, "What do you think of Trump's handling of the pandemic? You know, lying about it."
President Trump knew in early February that the coronavirus is deadlier than the flu and that it is airborne, but he purposely downplayed the seriousness of that threat in public and just days later was holding one of his big rallies inside an arena in New Hampshire. Did the president fail in his responsibility to protect the health and safety of Americans?
I believe that the president should have been straightforward with the American people. The American people can take hard facts, and he had an obligation as president to be straightforward with them and to tell all that he has known. I have said since the beginning that the president's performance has been uneven and that he should follow the advice of his excellent medical advisors.
No one asked her why she voted the way she did in Trump's impeachment trial, nor whether she had been proven wrong when she said Trump learned his lesson. First, she said he learned a lesson.
I believe that the president has learned from this case. What do you believe the president has learned? The president has been impeached. That's a pretty big lesson. I believe that he will be much more cautious in the future.
Then everyone told her to walk that back, so she did.
He learned a lesson. Well, I may not be correct on that. It's more aspirational on my part. It's more that I hope that he's listened to the many voices in the Senate who have pointed out that the call was very problematic.
Then Trump doubled down on beating the rap, proving he learned nothing from the experience, and firing, slandering, investigating almost anyone who had anything to do with his impeachment. Oh yeah, he learned his lesson. He learned there's nothing to stop him. And that was the Senate Republicans, and that included Collins from Maine.
I mean, Nadler, I know him much of my life. He's fought me in New York for 25 years. I always beat him. And I had to beat him another time. And I'll probably have to beat him again. Because if they find that I happen to walk across the street and maybe go against the light or something, let's impeach him. So we'll probably have to do it again because these people have gone stone cold crazy. But I've beaten them all my life, and I'll beat them again if I have to.
So Sarah, at one point during the debate, said she supported Biden and asked Collins whether she supported Trump. Collins said the public didn't need her advice.
President Trump, as Pat mentioned, lying about where we were in this state. And so I want to ask Senator Collins who she thinks should be leading this country. She has neglected to answer that question, and I'd like to give her the opportunity tonight. I think Joe Biden should be our leader to help us through with public health and rebuilding an economy.
Would you care to respond?
Well, Pat, let me say this. I don't think that the people of Maine need my advice on whom to support for president.
That's leadership? Hardly. Isn't that a discouraging profile? Certainly. This Maine race is a race to watch because if the Dems flip enough Senate seats, then Democrats will be in control of the Senate and the House. And yes, the White House when Biden wins on November the 3rd. Now, we've been talking about a Senate debate, and the journalists who participated ran a tight ship. But they had one candidate who reminds us of how a Trump could make a mockery out of a presidential debate. Stay tuned. U.S. Senate candidate Max Lynn once ran for governor in Florida and has since moved to Maine to run for governor in Maine. Movable guy. Lynn, a financial planner from Bar Harbor, is one of two unenrolled candidates who qualified for the ballot in November, along with former Green Party candidate Lisa Savage. Lynn told reporters he would only quit to endorse Senator Susan Collins if the Republican incumbent endorsed five of his preferred policies. I mention that because it gives you some idea what kind of a strange guy he is. Earlier this month, a Collins ally challenged Lynn's signature collection, but later withdrew the challenge to the Bar Harbor businessman's candidacy. So he doesn't come to us as a tabula rasa, a clean slate. He's a guy who has problems. Now, on Friday, during the debate, Lynn lived up to his rebellious method of operations when asked questions by the panel. Presumably, when you agree to appear in a debate for public office, you agree to the ground rules. I've been both a candidate and a moderator, and increasingly this is reduced to a contract on what's expected, the format, the sequence, etc., how much time you have, when you can object. When they came to Lynn in the debate, he refused to answer questions. He was going to talk about what he wanted to talk about. He said, "I reject the question." And then there was argument about that. Listen to one of his exchanges, what he had to say.
And that's how it is.
Okay, well, then let me ask for clarity. I'm competing against $100 million here, okay?
They're the front runners. In order for me to be the U.S. Senate candidate, I have to be out of the box tonight.
And we need to know where you stand on the issues.
I've got to be out of the box, and I've got to be different.
All right, Mr.
And
Lynn, thank you.
As a moderator, I want the question, but I don't want to be judged on my answer, because the only people judging my answer are the main voters on November 3rd.
Max, now you're taking my time.
Well, I request that you don't interrupt me, because I'm already fighting against 100 million. I don't want to fight the moderators all night. And part of my strategy is to be outside the box.
All right. Let's hear from Miss.
The strong moderator, and he was. He was a firm moderator, and he was reasonable, and he would have deserved the respect of any person who was.
And
he also, Lynn, ignored the questioning journalists. They couldn't get Lynn to conduct himself in the debate manner to answer the questions asked. Lynn said he had to act this way in order to win the election. Lynn has since said that he'll likely drop out of the race. So what's the relevance? Why bring this up? It is that Trump in 2016. Threatened to prosecute Hillary Clinton during one debate. He walked about the stage stalking her in another. So it seemed he told lies after lies and no one corrected him. When he was confronted with his attitude toward women, he made light of it. He made a joke. He actually later attacked one of the hosts who was questioning him at the debate. The media has shown little success getting Trump to conform with ordinary practice, going back to what we'd expect from a Lincoln-Douglas debate or a Kennedy-Nixon debate. This is nothing like that, and we already have the data points. Some of us are at a point where we can hardly bear to hear his voice. Turn off whatever is letting us hear his voice, TV, radio, anything. But lying and misconduct strongly suggest that what Biden should take is a buy, so to speak, on the debate. Why should we pretend that this man is going to conduct the debate in anything like a professional manner, like a statesman, like even a politician would? I know others disagree. They say, how will it look if he did it? Is he afraid? No. Sometimes you just have to say no, and this is one of them. No less than Speaker Pelosi has said the same thing, so I'm in good company. So I suggest, and I know others disagree with me, but those of you who do agree, tell Biden's folk he shouldn't be wasting his time with Bozo the Clown. Some say it's a tradition. Yes, I understand that. But Trump cares nothing about tradition. He smashes them all. He's already torn down the law and the Constitution, usurped the powers of Congress, attacked the courts, tried to rig this election, is trying to rig it even as I'm speaking to you in this podcast. He was impeached for trying to rig the election, for trying to attack the man he is now confronting as his opponent, who's trying to take over the White House so that we can restore the Republic. We expect Trump to do the right thing under these circumstances. Susan Collins even did a 180-degree turnaround on Trump learning his lesson from the impeachment. So why can't we learn something from what Trump has done in the past in these debates? There are so many lies that Trump tells, and among the biggest whoppers are those about the virus. So I thought we should spend a little time listening to some experts say something about what we can expect. Stay tuned. Trump keeps reassuring us that the vaccine is coming, like that will magically make this all go away. What will we be telling the public when we don't have a vaccine until next year, until it's ready to be distributed even later in the year? And how will we deal with the fact that it's not a magic bullet, that you don't just take it and magically you return to normal? Because that is not what a vaccine is, and that's not how this is going to work, even if it's successful, even if it came out early. Some of us remember doctors' shows like Ben Casey and Dr. Kildare, more likely shows like ER or House. In a single episode, they cure the most difficult and damaging and dangerous conditions. But for starters, we don't even have a vaccine. It's not here yet. And like I said, it may not be here until next year, and we don't know when next year. Given the distrust of this administration, we won't trust it unless Biden and the team that are unleashed to solve the crisis are created after Biden wins the election. Who would trust Trump, if by any device, legal or illegal, Trump wins, all bets are off on the safety of the vaccine and many other things. But back to the vaccine. If we do all this right, follow all the protocols, there's good cause to be concerned that the vaccine won't help anyone over 65 for some time. There's also concern that people will think things are normal and no longer wear masks or maintain their distance. A good friend and lab partner in high school, Kevin Bell, circulated an interview wide and far with Dr. Paul Offit, an infectious disease expert on the current state of the vaccine. It's important enough that I think you should hear it. Then I'd like to underscore several points.
Hello, I'm Eric Topol, editor-in-chief of Medscape, and it's a real privilege for me to have Paul Offit, who is my go-to expert in vaccines and an opportune time to talk about the vaccine for COVID-19. Paul, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric.
So this is a really a critical juncture for the vaccine against SARS-CoV-2. And I know you've been intimately involved with this for quite some time. That is, at least well before there was a pandemic and now that we're in the midst of it. Before we get into some of the nitty gritty, can you just give us your overall view of the landscape on this?
Well, it's an unprecedented moment. Never before in history have so many companies or so much money or so many different ideas for how to make a vaccine been brought to play. We're using every strategy that has ever been used to make a vaccine before, as well as a handful of strategies that have never been used to make a vaccine before. It's all happening at warp speed. I think at some level, that's disconcerting. A lot of the language that surrounds this, warp speed, finalist, race for a vaccine, I think scares people that either timelines are being inappropriately truncated, or worse, that safety guidelines are being ignored. But I think that we're good. I think right now, eight companies are in the midst of phase three trials, large prospective placebo-controlled trials to prove efficacy, and at least to some extent, or efficacy for a certain length of time, and prove safety at least in a certain number of people. So I think it's all right now, it's all good. As long as the phase three trials don't get truncated, as long as the administration doesn't try and reach its hand into warp speed and pull out a couple of vaccines and oversell them because there aren't enough data yet, I think we're fine.
Yeah, to go from warp to warped, I guess, in some respect. Now, we're going to get into that. Before we do that, there's several different types of vaccines. The two that the U.S. has put its biggest bets on are the mRNA vaccines of Moderna and Pfizer. But obviously there's several other vaccines. Like you said, there's eight that are in phase three. What's your sense, the mRNA vaccines that the U.S. has got the biggest investment emphasis have never been in people before in a vaccination program, whereas the others, at least some of the others, have.
And two is a vaccine. And I think with those two, we will be able to bring this virus under control. I do, but it'll take both. And what worries me on this is that if you had to pick which is the stronger of the two, I would go with hygienic measures. I mean, if I wear a mask and stand 6 feet away from you, you wear a mask and stand 6 feet away from me, the chances that I'm gonna get the virus from you or you from me is about zero. You have two things going for you. One, you have a mask, which is going to prohibit the virus from small droplets from traveling very far. And two, even if I didn't wear a mask that's 6 feet away, the odds are also that you can get it. So you have two
things. And by the way, if you do get it, you're going to get a lower dose too, which is important. Yeah.
Like that for mild season. The vaccine, on the other hand, if I get a vaccine and we have a vaccine that I think everybody would hope for, and it's, let's say, 75% effective against moderate to severe disease, that means one out of every four people can still get sick, including very sick. It also means probably a larger percentage than that, 25%, could get mild infection or asymptomatic infection, which they can still shed, and even shed to the point of contagiousness. We've been asking these trials, as they've been moving forward with these companies, to look at that, to look not only at whether they're protecting against moderate to severe disease, but to what extent they're protecting against shedding, because I think that is important to know. But people have such, I think, an unrealistic expectation of these vaccines that they see it as the panacea, as the magic
yeah,
vaccine to make it all the right way.
The crazy stuff about sterilization immunity. I mean,
right.
You
know. It's not going to happen. I just imagine that happening. I mean, I don't think the wild-type viruses, human coronaviruses, do that. Why do we think this is going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, it isn't like we're talking about, by the way, are we missing the boat by not pursuing a intranasal vaccine for mucosal immunity?
I certainly think it's just like Loomis was. I think it's a good idea. But just to finish off this one thought, I think that if people feel that have unrealistic expectations, like that it's causing, or at least that they imagine that it's causing sterilized immunity, I've gotten the vaccine, I'm good. I don't need to wear a mask. I don't need to social distance. I can engage in higher risk activities. And then you've lost one of the important arms to bring this virus under control, arguably a more important arm, and that we won't have any impact initially because when we bring the vaccine out. When we bring the vaccine up in terms of use, we'll do social distancing and masking down, which could end up having a sort of break-even effect.
Well, you're bringing up a critical point that I think a lot of people miss, and that is the vaccine effect could actually increase the number of people who are actually asymptomatic carriers because they basically have protection from beyond their mucosa, but they're still got the virus in their nose and their upper respiratory tract to spread. And that's why this coupling of continued hygiene, mask and distance and these other measures are going to be important all the way through until we get out there with a very dense immunity of the population, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It depends. I mean, there's a formula for this, actually. I mean, it's if you have 75% effective vaccine against shedding, because really that's against significant shedding, then you would need to immunize about 2/3 of the American population to get the R naught to less than one, meaning to stop spread. Which is daunting. I mean, because you're talking about two-dose vaccines, at least the ones that are initially rolling out are two-dose vaccines. And if you're talking about, 2/3 of the population, you're talking about, 400 million doses. We're not going to have that, obviously.
No.
Among those who, by age, are considered more vulnerable to the infection, there is concern that the over 65 population will be inadequately represented in the phase 3 trials. This means, according to other experts, that if a vaccine is approved in, say, the first quarter of next year, it won't be until about the third quarter that older folks will have any decent idea of its safety for them. There's a question, so after the vaccine, can we drop the mask? Do we have to distance? The answer is no, we can't. We have to do everything we're doing now. Dr. Offit said we have two ways of stopping this virus. One is hygienic measures, face masks, social distancing, hand washing, and the other is the vaccine. With those two, we will be able to bring this virus under control. But it will take both, you understand? It will take both. It's not one or the other. It's both together. What worried Dr. Offit was that the stronger of the two approaches is wearing a mask and standing 6 feet away from you. If you wear a mask and stand 6 feet away from anyone, the chances that you're going to get the virus are about zero. You have two things going for you. One, you have a mask, which is going to prohibit the virus's small droplets from traveling very far. And two, even if you didn't wear a mask and you stand 6 feet away, the odds are also that you wouldn't get it. Dr. Topol, who interviewed Dr. Offit, pointed out, and if you do get it, if you take these precautions, you get a lower dose of the virus, which is important. Offit agreed you might get a more mild disease. Why isn't the vaccine enough? Dr. Offit said, listen to the stats. If we have a vaccine and it's 75% effective against moderate to severe disease, that means one out of every four people can still get sick, including very sick, including dying. It also means probably a larger percentage than the 25% could get mild infection or asymptomatic infection, which they could still shed even to the point of contagiousness. Offit warned, we've been asking these trials to look not only at whether they're protecting against moderate to severe disease, but to what extent they are protecting against shed. I think that is important to know, but people have such an unrealistic expectation, this is the doctor speaking, of these vaccines, that they see it as the panacea, as the magic bullet to make it all go away. You can't say it enough, Offit said. If people have unrealistic expectations, so that they think, I've gotten the vaccine, I'm good, I don't need to wear a mask. I don't need to social distance. I can engage in high-risk activities. Then we've lost. One of the most important arms to bring this virus under control, arguably a more important arm, because it's 100% effective for the reasons the doctor said. If when we bring the vaccine up in terms of users, we move social distancing and masking down, Dr. Offit said we could end up having a sort of break-even effect. So those of you who are already doing the right thing, keep on doing it and hunker down for a long period of time before we get this straightened out. Thanks for joining our podcast. Subscribe if you haven't, and join us again next Sunday. All the best and be safe.